I appreciate so much the faculty and the committee that put this together. They did a lot of hard work, a tremendously hard job to put all this together. So thank you so much for being here. Did you guys like the book? Did you enjoy the book? Did you really? Okay, great. Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about how I wrote the book and some things that went into writing the book and sort of the circumstance of my finishing the book and turning it into my publisher. When I finished Boy's Life, I thought it was the best book I'd ever written. I was really proud of it. I mean, I thought this was hitting on all cylinders. Very proud of it. It was the 11th book, kind of 11th book of my writing career. I thought, man, my publisher's going to call me, and they're going to say, Rick, we're really excited about this book. I mean, you know, it's there. We didn't know you had it in you to write this book. Before that, let me tell you what I'd been writing. Among other things, I'd written about vampires destroying the city of Los Angeles, about a young man who can communicate with the dead, about the modern-day Usher family from Edgar Allan Poe's Fall of the House of Usher. I'd written about a bounty hunter from outer space and about the nuclear destruction and rebirth of the world, among other things. But Boy's Life was different. Not meaning to say that the books I had done previously were not up to my standards. I'm very proud of them. But Boy's Life was different. So I waited for the phone call from my publisher, and soon it came. Rick, they said, this book is not what you usually do. We think you need to cut most of the material about the town and the people in it, and just write about the murder, because after all, it really is a murder mystery. So they basically wanted to gut the book. How do you think I felt when I got that call? I've been trying to figure out what you, all of you, and I have in common. I turned 57 years old in July, so I'm getting up there. The world I knew as a boy growing up is not the world you know. The world you know will not be the world of your sons. But that's how the world works. Change is the only constant. So what do you and I possibly have in common? One word. Pain. I knew pain when my publisher called me and told me my book ought to be changed because really, it wasn't what they wanted. You will know pain. You might already know it. You might know it in the death of a pet, or the loss of a friend, or an unhappiness or unfairness somewhere in your life. But you'll know it if you don't already. If not this year or the next year, then somewhere ahead of you. Because that's the world too. Though we see wonderful things in the world, that we know wonderful people. Each day can hold a miracle, and each hour, each minute is a thing of beauty and worth. There will be pain. Count on it. So what do you do to get ready for it? What can you do? What can you do to keep the world from inflicting upon you a little death? The death of a little of your innocence. The death of a little of your joy. The death of a little of your imagination. Corey wasn't ready for the world when the three strange creatures on the train showed him what lay beyond Zephyr. The lady knew he wasn't ready. But Corey figured out what he needed, not to avoid the hurtful things of life, because, you know, they can't be avoided, but to be able to handle them when they came. And they will come. But he figured out that he needed a purpose like a fixed star that he could always follow, and courage. He figured he was going to need a lot of courage, too. That's what we all need, you and I, all of us in this auditorium. We need purpose, and we need courage. Let me tell you a story I remember reading when I was a boy. I still love to read history. So this is from a history book I read. And a lot of you may know this story already. The book was about the explorers and missionaries who went into the Canadian wilderness in the 1600s, like, 400 years ago. But true story. Like I say, you may know this. But a Jesuit priest and three missionaries went into the wilderness to teach the Iroquois Indians about God. The first thing that Iroquois did was to cut the heads of the missionaries off and play their version of soccer with them. Then they turned their attentions to the priest, but they didn't kill him outright because he knew a little bit of the Iroquois language. They enjoyed keeping him around as kind of a toy. Over the course of several months, they cut off his fingers, they cut off his toes, they broke his back, they cut off his nose, they cut off his ears, they broke his legs, they starved him. They took him as close to death as anybody can get without dying. He suffered in silence. Finally, when he thought he couldn't stand anymore, they stopped torturing him, and they began to treat him with the greatest respect. And the Iroquois chief said to him, "Because you did not rage in your pain, because you did not weep and wail in your torment, because your bones could be broken, but never your spirit, we are ready to listen to you, because your great father must be stronger than ours." The priest stayed with them in a place of honor for the rest of his life, and the Indians did listen, because he had gained their respect. You will be tested. Beyond Jesuit High School, beyond New Orleans, out in that wilderness somewhere, out there, you will be tested. Purpose and courage. Purpose is a fixed star to guide your journey, and courage to go the distance. I'd like to suggest two ways to find your purpose and grow your courage. The first one, read. Try your best to understand the world we live in. Keep up with current events. Form your own opinions and make your own decisions, even if they're very different from the opinions and the decisions of everyone else around you. Reading is vital. Reading is essential for the growth of the mind, for the growth of the imagination, improvement of your vocabulary, which is so important in this world, believe me. And I firmly believe that people who read are genuinely happy than people who do not read. You build the power of your own imagination and creativity by reading. And 100,000 worlds open up to you and are right there as close as a book if you master and find pleasure in the art of reading. The second, don't back down. Accept challenges. Push yourself to finish what you start. You know, that's a big part of being a man. Once you decide to do something, and you decide something's worthy to do, you don't stop until it's done. Once you decide it's worth doing, you walk through fire to do it and to finish it well. If I didn't believe that, I would never have written my first book. And I certainly would not have written Boy's Life. Courage to meet someone new, to spread kindness. And if you don't think that doesn't take courage, it does. To listen, to hear also takes courage. Not to be afraid to speak your opinion, because all of you have great value and all of you have something great to say and do in this world. You're going to know pain. You're going to know unfairness. You're going to know disappointment. But you do not have to know defeat. Can you imagine what I felt when When I got that call from about Boy's Life from my publisher saying I needed to gut the book, something I believed in so strongly, something I'd worked on so long, something that came from me, from my life, from my experiences. No, Rick, it's not good enough. Tear it up, gut it, make it what we want it to be. Can you imagine that? And I'll tell you what I did. I got on a plane for New York the next day. I walked into that office, and because I had a purpose, I found the courage to say, I believe you are wrong. I believe the book should be published just as it was written. And because I believe that strongly, here is Boy's Life, just as it was written. Gentlemen, read. Think for yourselves. Learn. Have kindness and compassion and empathy for other people. Reach out to those who need help. Find joy and purpose in every day, and show courage to every challenge. Pain, yes. Unfairness, yes. Disappointment, yes. But defeat, never. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad you enjoyed the book. Thank you so much. Thank you. I'd like to take questions for you guys, and what I'm going to do is I'd like to come down there and stand right here. Questions, and whoever has a question to ask, I'll be right there. Hang on. Thank you. Okay, sure. Questions, anybody? Yeah. Here's the mic. It's going to be like mic to mic.
Did you edit the book at all?
Did I edit it? Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I kind of do self-editing. For every page I do, every page that's in the book is probably represents 20 pages or more. So I kind of edit it as I go along.
Yeah. I mean, after the...
Oh, yeah, it's edited.
Did you change
yeah.
anything?
Yeah, it's edited. It's edited. Okay. You know, and you catch misspellings and you catch stuff that you know, should have caught the first time around. So that's part of the process. Yeah, yeah.
How long did it take you to write the book?
It took me about 4 months, but I actually been working on, I actually started a book similar to Boy's Life before I wrote this one. It didn't work out. So the idea, I kind of had the idea for a long time. But it actually took 4 months to write. But it usually takes me about 6 to 9 months to write a book. So this one's pretty quick. Yeah.
Hi. I was just wondering, how often do you get writer's block and what do you do to overcome
writer's block? You know, I don't get writer's block. I'm really glad and I'm blessed I don't get writer's block, because I always have, my deal is, you know, I'm writing the book that I want to read. And so, you know, I'm excited about what I'm doing and I want to read it, you know, and if I don't write from an outline. So I think some writers get writer's block because they write from an outline, you know, and everything's written down, what's going to happen, this, that, and the other. And that to me would be boring. You know, I don't want to know that, because I kind of want to know, you know, I don't want to know what's going to happen. I just want to kind of let it go. And so, no, I don't get writer's block.
Okay,
I'm glad I don't. Yeah, in the back. Hang on. Sorry. Yes, sir. Oh,
I just wanted to know, like, how did you get it published? Like, what's the process you have to go through to publish a book?
Well, you know, I have an agent. So the deal is, my first book, I finished my book and I sent it off to an agent, and my first book was published, which is amazing to me, because most writers don't get their first books published. But basically, I found an agent in a book called Writer's Marketplace, and it's a book about agents and publishers. So, actually, my first book I published, but that's how it happened. But I worked, you know, the first book was pretty hard. I didn't know what I was getting into. My first book is about 330 pages. I had no idea what I was getting into. So, you know, yeah.
What inspired you to write this book?
Well,
I think it was a lot of my experiences growing up, though, you know, there's a lot of, you know, made up stuff in the book too, of course. But, you know, I used to go with some friends of mine to the country, and actually I lived in the city. But my friend had a place in the country, and it was kind of near a town, kind of like Zephyr. There's really not a Zephyr, a real Zephyr, but there's a place that I kind of modeled Zephyr on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Hang on. Yes.
Like, what creature did you like model old Moses off of? Like, what was he supposed to be?
I think I described him as sort of a combination of a snake and an alligator. But actually, it's modeled on... I don't know if you guys know. Do you guys put together models? Any of you guys put together models? Nobody puts... Come on. Well, they used to have some really cool models when I was growing up. They used to have models of, like, monsters. And they were, like, dinosaur models. So, I mean, you could do mashups. You could get, like, about 6 or 7 of these dinosaur models and put them together, you know, and really mash them up. They're really cool looking. So I think I got one. I think I got a Triceratops, and I got a Tyrannosaurus, and I got a sea monster, and put them all together. And I always remembered that I did that, and I always thought that would be a cool monster to put in a book. So I think that probably started my feeling about, you know, old Moses. Yeah, did you?
Yes. Were any of the actual characters based on people you knew growing up?
Yeah. Some of them were, but you know, all characters are part of you, part of the writer. So some were, and some were just kind of, you know, just kind of more made up than not.
What made you want to start being a writer?
I've been a writer since I was about, I guess, 6 years old. And I started writing in the first grade. I started doing short stories in the first grade. I don't know. I think I was just born to do this. And it's something I didn't realize. I thought, well, you know, this is maybe a... It started out kind of as a hobby, you know, just something to have fun with and kind of express myself. But it just happened. I can't really explain that. I think I was born to do this, I guess. But, so I always wanted to do it. It was always fun.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Hello?
Yeah. What inspired you to write the book? They already asked.
Hey, no, fair question. I mean, really, you got to ask that question because I'm not sure I even answered it right over here. What inspired me to write the book was... I had a story to tell. You know, I had a story to tell, and it was my life, in a way. It was what I hoped was going to happen with my life. I hoped that I would be able, as a kid, I hoped I'd be able to be a writer and express myself through writing. So, you know, it was a story that I felt I really had to tell. And, you know, when again, talking about purpose, you know, when you have a purpose that's so strong... You can't hold it back. So really, it's a story that I couldn't hold back. I had to write it. So that's what I'm asking you guys to do. You know, find your purpose. Find something you enjoy doing. Something that is so strong in your life that you can't hold it back. And when that happens, you know, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. Nothing's easy. But something that you feel strongly about is always worth doing. Okay, in the back?
Yes, sir. Two questions. One, what is your purpose? And two, you use a word processor, I'm assuming.
Yes, right.
But you didn't if you've been writing 20 books.
Right.
At one point, you weren't.
Right.
Has word processing made you necessarily a better writer? And for writers in general, has word processing been good or bad? And what is your purpose?
Let me go up to the front to answer that. My purpose is to express myself the best way I can, to tell these stories and hope that other people will appreciate them, to unburden myself in a way, because I didn't have a very happy childhood growing up. I didn't really know my father, so this whole experience of writing about boys' life about Corey and his father is very cathartic to me. It took me to a place I wish I had been when I was a boy, but I can never go. So the only way I can capture that is through my imagination. But my purpose is to develop my imagination, is to say what I want to say in this world, to leave a mark on this world for the better. That's my purpose. That's my hope. Now, about word processing. Yeah, I used to write my books on typewriter. And I used to use that, you know, when I made a mistake, I used to have to use that whiteout stuff. I don't know if you guys even know what that stuff is, but you know, you have to use it, the whiteout stuff. So, I think I've become a better writer by using the word processor, because you can concentrate more on writing. You don't have to concentrate as much on fixing, because that was a real pain when you had to go back and fix all that stuff with whiteout. So now, you know, if I get to the end of a book and I think, I don't like that name, and names are very important. So if you get to the end of a book and you don't like a person's name, character's name, you can change the name instantly throughout the entire book. So that's, you know, you don't have to worry about that. But I do think it's helped my writing. Yeah.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
Like, is that all you did? You said it took 4 months to write the book?
Yeah.
Is that what you did for 4 months?
That's what I did. That's what I do.
That's all you did for 4 months.
That's all you do. That's all you do. That's all you do. Well, you know, let me give you some kind of rundown on how I work. I work at night. I start working about 10 at night, and I work until about 4 or 5 in the morning. And actually, when I'm going on a book, I mean, I can work to start at 10 at night and work 12 hours straight. So it's a very demanding job. I mean, it doesn't, you know, you see movies or whatever about writers sitting around, and, you know, you got a good question. Is that all I do during the day? You know, I mean, I write, and big deal, right? Okay? But, I mean, it's really hard. It's tough on you. It's physically demanding, mentally demanding. It's a hard job. So, and it's always there. I mean, hey, right now, somewhere, I'm thinking about the book that I'm doing right now. Because I'm doing a book about a rock band in the summer of 2008. And I'm about to finish that. I'm finishing that up in September. So right now, somewhere, I'm thinking about that. Last night, I was thinking about it. You're always thinking about it. And when you start, you know, it's fun to think about a book and, you know, oh, you're getting it ready, you're getting it started. But when you actually start the book, you're in it. You're in it for the long haul. And it may take 6 to 9 months to finish it. So it's a tough job. Yes, sir. Here you go.
Okay, so I'm assuming that you identify yourself with Corey, and a major part of the book is maybe fashion through your experiences in the past, but why do you, as an author, want us to identify with Corey also?
I want you to identify, or at least try to identify, because it's a universal character. Because the things he faces, you know, we're talking about the 60s, long time ago. You know, you guys probably don't have a lot of interest in the 60s. But in some way, the 60s will come back around. History repeats itself. Something that happened in the 60s will come around again in another form or fashion. The character is a universal character. He understands and has to deal with pain. He has to deal with a friend's alcoholic parents, father, alcoholic father. He has to deal with death. He has to deal with misunderstandings, with violence. He has to deal with hatred. He has to struggle with unrequited love. That's you guys. It doesn't matter what year the book is set in, really. The setting of the book is just kind of a backdrop. It's kind of the stage setting. What he deals with is what you guys will have to deal with. Life. So it's a universal character. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Yes.
How many times have you read the book?
Mm-mm. I read it many times writing it, because I would read it over and over again. I didn't read it for a long time because I don't really like to read my old work, because I'm very super critical of my own work. I read it the other night, the whole book in one night, and I found like three errors in it. And that drives me nuts, drives me crazy, because I found three errors. So I'd say I'd read it, I guess, three times. Yes?
Was saying, Vernon Thaxter, the character in your book.
Yeah.
Knowing the trauma that he went through with his own book, that right. is compared to you.
Right.
And also, you kind of have a little bit of yourself in each character.
Right.
Like, Corey yes. is your childhood.
Yes.
And Vernon Thaxter is the part of your life where you had a difficulty.
Right.
What caused him to have the mental problem, to think that he was clothed when he wasn't?
Yeah. Well, the deal is there that he, you know, I think you brought up a really interesting point, and it's something I need to think about. If Corey was my boyhood, I hope Thaxter's not my, Vernon's not going to be my future. But Vernon is part of me, because I did go through trauma. Absolutely, I did. His father told him, and see, I grew up with my grandfather. My grandfather said the same thing to me. My grandfather said, forget writing. He wanted me to get into the furniture business. He said, don't, you know, forget writing. You'll never make any money off being a writer. But I've got this furniture business for you to get into, and that's what you ought to do, because nobody makes any money off writing. And, you know, you're not going to be good enough. You're not going to be good enough. But I had nobody in my life to encourage me to do what I do now. It was all me. And where that comes from, I don't know. But I found my purpose early. So his father has told him, you're not going to be any good. You are no good. So he tries his very best. And when this thing explodes on him in New York, and this book he's written does not work, and the publishers say, you know, write another book. You've got another book in you, but you know, he only had the one book in him. It was going to be a good book and a true book and a book about life, but he only had the one book in him. And so his father says, you know, look, you're really messed up. And because you messed up, you're not worth the clothes I buy for you. You're not worth the clothes I buy for you because you're a failure. So he took off his clothes. He said, you're right. And he retreated into himself. So that's why he walks around with no clothes. He walks around with no clothes because he has found his own purpose and his own courage to make his own statement. And though we think of it as being an insane statement, right? That guy had guts because he's his own man. And that's Vernon. So that's why. Yes.
I know I've already asked a question, but this one's kind of eating at me.
Okay.
What kind of books did you read as a child?
I read a lot of mystery, a lot of science fiction. I read, and I think there's a picture of Ray Bradbury up there in the PowerPoint presentation. A lot of Ray Bradbury's work, and his work is like fantasy, science fiction, mystery. You know, when I was a kid, I read all the Hardy Boys books. Mystery magazines. I read everything. History, biographies. I really haunted the library. Because I always thought of books as being worlds, you know. And books are time machines and worlds that you can go into and not disappear into, but visit. So I read a lot of stuff. Yeah, okay. Guys, thank you so much for your attention, and I hope you, thank you, and thank you, I hope you enjoyed the book, and go Jesuit High School. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Awesome job.
Thank you.
Awesome job.
Thank you.